should you listen to me? I mean, you have never met me. You don't know who I am. The only thing you know that I am from Germany and I'm a physical therapist. I'll give you a few things why it is important to listen to what I try to tell you today and the information that I will provide for you, why it can be beneficial for your success as a physical therapist. I have 10 and plus more experience in musculoskeletal physical therapy, and I have also finished a degree in manual therapy and completing a 5-year degree in osteopathy. I have seen thousands of manual techniques, and I can tell you which are key in order to achieve results that you actually need. We have treated in our clinic, and as the students that have participated in the program, they have seen different techniques and approaches that we taught them, and they've seen results after the first treatment that they have received. Based on the knowledge that you will have, you will see results with the patient. And something that is not uncommon, my wife is also from India, and I'm very passionate about Indian culture, and this is some knowledge that I would like to give you from Germany to you. So anything that I will share will be very genuine, and I will try to be as helpful and knowledgeable as I can also further on when we will go into the Q&A section. So the shoulder joint is one of the most complex joints. The reason for that is that when we observe the shoulder joint, we not only have the shoulder, but we have the whole shoulder girdle. The glenohumeral joint is the most mobile joint in our body. It has the most mobility and it is stabilized with the muscle structures. So if we are talking about the shoulder joint, we need to understand where it is located. And the shoulder joint is located within the scapula. The scapula is the shoulder blade. So the scapula affects all movements of the shoulder joint. So if the scapula is not mobile, it will affect how the shoulder joint will perform, and it can also cause pain and discomfort within the shoulder. So while evaluating the glenohumeral joint, the shoulder joint, you will always need to look into the scapula. Then the collarbone. Very little attention is given to the collarbone. It is a bone which has not much of a movement. Basically, when you elevate your arm, what it does is a rotation. And if it is limited, you might have a pinching symptom or a pain symptom within this area. But the collarbone is also the gateway to the plexus brachialis. Who knows what the plexus brachialis is? Just raise your hand. Very important structure. As you see, most of all, know what it is. So if there's tension, pressure on that plexus brachialis, you will always have symptoms within the shoulder. So you need to always test the collarbone in order to evaluate full array of symptoms that you might have in your shoulder. Just as if you have neurological symptoms. As we know, the cervical spine has all nerves that go to the spine up, and they innervate the whole shoulder. You have the ulnaris, the radialis, and then you have the medianus nerve. And if there's tension on the collarbone, through muscle tension from the pectoralis, subclavius, or other muscles, you will always have similar symptoms as a prolapse of an intervertebral disc might cause. So if you have neurological symptoms, patients who have similar problems, you will always have to look into the collarbone and test if tension or pressure on that structure is causing similar symptoms or increasing the symptoms within the patient's experience. And to conclude, we also have the thoracic spine and the ribs. Why is it important? Why is it important to look into the thoracic spine when we're treating the shoulder? It's because when you elevate the arm, when you move the arm, you have always an extension or flexion of the thoracic spine, just as rotation of the ribs and internal and external rotation of the rib structure. In other words, if this structure is not mobile enough, then the movement of the scapula will be restricted. And as we learned earlier, the scapula is the area where the shoulder joint stands. So if there is restricted movement in the scapula, it will also affect the shoulder joint. So you should always look into your thoracic spine of a patient. And if there's any functional blocks, which we are all prone to, in the ribs or in the thoracic spine, then you should also resolve that, which will lead mostly an immediate increase of range of motion of the patient. So as you see, the shoulder girdle is a very functional area that you have to understand in its full holistic overview in order to treat the shoulder joint. We always see an array of patients. Day in, day out, they have different symptoms, they have different problems, and we all have learned hundreds, maybe thousands of tests on how to evaluate the shoulder joint, press belly test, empty can, whatever, whatsoever. But what I see, and something that I've seen in other students participating in the course or employees working at my practice, they have difficulties evaluating and differentiating different symptoms for the patient in order to prescribe the right treatment for them. So who of you has an easy time to diagnose a proper shoulder diagnose? Just raise your hand. For whom it is easy? As I see, for no one. It is expected because it's a very complex joint. You have many structures that affect its movement, as we have seen before. We have many structures that impact the pain and the movement of the joint. But there is a very easy understanding and easy framework for you that you should take home today in order to achieve the results you need with the patient. So there's basically just three important subgroups that you need to understand in order to categorize and prescribe the right treatment for the patient. You have shoulder instability, you have movement restriction, and you have muscular imbalances. And these three approaches will guide you through your life and through your work as a physical therapist in order to do proper work with the patient. I will explain in a bit more detail what I mean by these three categories. So, what is shoulder instability? These are mostly patients who have some form of injury where the shoulder got subluxated or luxated, or patients that have, when you test the shoulder, a very laxative, very movable shoulder joint. So this kind of patient you will always see mostly who are not doing much of exercise, who are not on the stronger side, and who have a very soft tissue. If you see this kind of patient and you can recognize it immediately by listening to their medical history or by testing the joint, you should always think, okay, this is the subgroup of shoulder instability. So this thought and understanding in that, how you treat this kind of patient, is you should focus on stability training. This is not the patient who you go and apply the techniques that you have learned from all the Kaltenborn and manual therapy techniques. You don't mobilize the shoulder for this patient. They have too much mobility. You need to restrict the mobility with stability exercises. So when you see a patient who has a shoulder instability, what do you do with them? Exercises, stability exercises, not mobility, stability exercises. And the focus on the treatment should always be active. The second group is movement restriction. What is movement restriction? It's basically a restricted shoulder that is not having enough movement. An example of that is shoulder, frozen shoulder. I guess you all know what the frozen shoulder is. Okay. I will not go into detail explaining all the phases and what to do, what when. But if you see the patient and you tested all the areas, you tested cervical spine, thoracic spine, you tested scapula, the movement of that structures are good. You see no restriction there. The only restriction is within the shoulder. Then the focus of this patient should be on manual treatment. You need to release the shoulder. You need to get the mobility back so that they can do the movement they can actually want to do in their day-to-day life. So if you see a patient who has a restriction within the movement of the shoulder, then this is a second category where you focus on manual treatment. It's quite easy, right? And the last subgroup, this is actually the majority of the patients that you might see, it's also the most complex, are muscular imbalances. These are your impingement syndrome patients. You all know what an impingement syndrome is, or should I explain? It's clear, okay. Impingement syndrome is a very, well, a lot of people discuss and say that it's not actually existence, it's more due to central sensitization on how we perceive pain, how we experience pain, and then we might experience it within the shoulder, which can become chronic. But when you see a patient and they have a good range of motion, but the pain in the shoulder is during the movement that they have, then it is due to muscular imbalances. And when you look in the patient like that, you might ask yourself, what do I have to treat then? When they have a muscular imbalance, then you have to treat the muscles. You need to focus on the muscles and you need to apply techniques on the key muscles that we will discuss in a second in order to release this, problems that they might or can have. So specifically with this patient, which is by far the most complex in treatment, there are three muscle groups that you always need to look into in order to get the results that you're looking for. The first of all, and always underlooked, undervalued muscle is the levator scapulae muscle. The levator scapulae muscle, in comparison to the trap muscle, is a very thick and strong muscle, and it is innervated with nervus accessorius. Why is it important? Why is it important to know the innervation of that muscle? It's because this nerve is one of the nerves which is one of the brain nerves. And when you are under stress, when you are foregoing any form of pain, you have bad posture, this nerve will be triggered. And what happens then? Shoulders go up. And the problem is that they also stay there. They don't go down. And what have we learned before? When the movement of the scapula is affected, which it does when the muscular, when the levator scapulae is tight, then the movement of the shoulder will also be restricted. So basically, when we elevate the arm, shoulder blade goes down. And when the levator scapulae is tight, is strong, it will not allow the down movement of the scapula, which leads to the impingement syndrome in the shoulder. So in order to release pain for our muscular imbalance patient, we need to trigger, we need to work with the levator scapulae. The second muscle that you always have to look into, and this is something that has been preached in all PT schools around all countries. I don't know any PT who doesn't know about the rotator cuff, but the rotator cuff is the key muscle of the shoulder. Why? Because it stabilizes the shoulder. But the problematic structure of the shoulder is not the rotator cuff, it's the bicep. The bicep is a muscle that is always compensating for the weak rotator cuff. So when we elevate the arm, the bicep does it. When we do outer rotation with an elevated arm, it's also the outer bicep that does it. If the rotator cuff is not strong enough, then the tension in the bicep will increase, just as the symptoms within the shoulder will also increase because of the constant compensation of the bicep. In order to reduce the compensation through the bicep, you need to activate the shoulder blade. So basically, when you're training the rotator cuff, you simply reducing the activity of the bicep muscle and reactivating the rotator cuff, that it simply does your work. But in the day-to-day life, the rotator cuff is just not active enough. We don't have any more movements that are triggering and strengthening for the rotator cuff. There's less movement where we do outer rotation. There's less movement where we actually elevate the arm to the side. So this is a muscle that is often causing problems, but it's causing problems because our biceps are too strong. We have our phone in this hand, again, training biceps. We are cooking, training bicep. We are driving, training bicep. So modern life led us to have a very strong bicep and very weak rotator cuff. And because of that, so many patients are having problems with the rotator cuff. But the problem is not the rotator cuff, but a very too strong bicep. So when you see a patient with muscular imbalances, then you should look always in these three categories, at least in these three muscles, and you should work with these muscle groups. So this is for you a very simple framework that you should go back once. You should look in these three categories when you are evaluating, taking medical history of the patient. Always think about three different frameworks. Is it a shoulder instability? Then you do stability training. Is it movement restriction? Then you focus on manual mobilization. If it is muscular imbalances, then you should treat the muscles. And if you understand this very simple framework, then diagnosing and treating shoulder patients becomes easy because you simply know and understand how to work with them. So for now, we would like to perform a small evaluation of a patient. As you see, we have a tension in the levator scapulae.
Yes.
I think if you pinch your neighbor in this specific area, they will also have the similar pain due to stress, working conditions. This muscle becomes tense, specifically when you have chronic pain. So we have a patient who have problems since 2 years. After 6 months of ongoing pain symptoms, we can speak of a chronic pain. So chronic pain just increases the stress and puts more strain on that specific muscle. I mean, we all know the case where we have a patient with a shoulder pain and then they come and explain you and tell you about their back pain, their knee pain, their headache and everything else, their life problems, about their nephew and... I mean, this is normal, but as a therapist, you should focus on one issue, because effectively you can usually fix one problem within one treatment, and next treatment you can dedicate to a different issue. So don't let the patients diverge your clinical reasoning and your treatment process. Okay, I think we can go on with active. I will show one movement. You can tell her to just try to repeat after me. So, look at me. Try to repeat the movement that I'm showing. This. Okay. Hold here. Go up. Outer. Go up. Okay. Connect. Paining. Pull up. Paining. Keep the elbows together. No? No pain. Okay, extend the arms. Go a bit to the side. Yeah. And then slowly go down. Is this causing any pain? So this is an overall test with which you can actively test the whole function of the shoulder. The specifics and details on what you diagnose and what you can evaluate from this test, we discuss in our workshop. So this is just an overview how you can see the function of the shoulder. Now we move on to passive treatment. Try to sit straight. So you lift the arm and then you see how the scapula is moving. When does it's pain?
Pain when she comes down.
Comes down. Okay.
It comes down
and pain. Yeah. What?
I'm relaxing.
We not break.
How's here? There's no pain? Here. Yeah. So this is a typical case of a muscular imbalance patient. They have good range of motion, but they have pain through specific areas of the movement. We have painful arc, we have an impingement that is happening beneath the protesis coracoideus, and we have muscular points which are painful. Again, you have levator scapulae, you have the biceps which are overactive, and we have the rotator cuff which is not doing its job in order to reduce the strain from the shoulder. And the problem is that all that is causing an inflammation of the joint because of the increased compression beneath the protesis coracoideus, so the scapular arc. We have also a kyphosis. We have limited rotation of the cervical spine. These all are contributing factors that are decreasing the ability to move the scapula and in retrospect also the movement of the shoulder. There's some muscular tests that I would like you to see. It's a very simple test that you can already implement in your day-to-day practice. So hold your arms like this. I will push them inwards. You need to resist the movement. Can you translate? Just hold. I will push. Yeah? Push, resist. Yeah. Hold. See, here she can resist the movement. Here's nothing is happening. Nothing is going on. She cannot resist, and she is immediately compensating in our favorite bicep. So this is a very typical case for the weak rotator cuff and overstrained bicep. So with this kind of patient, you need to test and work with these structures. Strengthen the rotator cuff and reduce the tension from the bicep and from the levator scapulae. The techniques on how to do that and how to release this tension, this all we do in the course, which is gonna be over a more extended period of time. Unfortunately, we don't have the time to explain and show everything today. We also have a video treatment which is available on our YouTube channel where you can see the whole treatment of a shoulder joint. That won't be shown today, but you can also review and see that online if you need to. When you are doing treatments, when you actually want to decide and find the proper strategy for the patient to find the right techniques, the right methods, you need to focus on certain core principles in order to achieve the results that you actually want to achieve. There are three principles that are required in order to achieve good results with the patients. The first principle is the Pareto principle. Who knows what the Pareto principle is? 80-20? Yeah. Exactly. The 20% of efforts from the patients are the exercises. So if the patient is not doing the 20% of exercises, 80% of PT work will be useless. Therefore, you as a physical therapist are the person who should prescribe exercises and make sure that the patient is actually feeling the right muscles, the right structures while performing these exercises, so that the patient can do their 20% in order to achieve the majority of the results long-term and short-term. Another point is less is more. What do I mean by that? We all have seen our patients. We all have talked to them. We all have created exercise programs which are amazing. We have read about the evidence. We have reviewed studies and understood why they're important, and we try to convey that to the patient. We show them 20 exercises, and when they come to the next treatment and we ask them, what have you done at home? They say, nothing. We have done nothing. Why? Because we prescribe and give too many exercises. It is too complicated. The patients, they tell us that they don't have time. They tell us that they're mother is in hospital or anything has happened. They have to cook, they have to take care of children. They come with excuses. You won't even, I don't have to tell you what the excuses are. I think you all know what they are. But if you give them two or three simple exercises which are targeting the right muscles, then they have no excuse. And they will be able to remember the exercises. So pick your exercises strategically, keep them concise, make sure that the patient understands them, and then they will actually do them. And also ask, have you done them? And then you will also hear, oh, this was so simple, I have done them, I felt the muscle, and then they will get the results that you want them to get. And last but not least, something that we have also discussed earlier, focus on the patient's feedback. You need to always see and understand what your patient is experiencing through the exercises. Pain is not a bad thing. Pain is normal. You will always have patients who will experience pain through the exercises, but the quality of pain is what will determine if they will continue or not continue the exercise. If through exercise the pain is getting lesser, then it is a good exercise. If through exercise the pain is increasing, then you should not do that. So you can only gather this information when you talk to the patient and when you get their feedback. So let them always confirm what they're experiencing through the exercises that you are teaching and showing to them. I want to show you one simple exercise which you can do with most of the patients. This is something that we have also performed earlier. This is exercise is called circumduction, and within this exercise you have all movements of the shoulder. So basically what you do, you make a fist, hold it as tight as you can, then you move the shoulders back with as much tension as you have. Hold the tension, go out, then move the arms up till they touch each other. Connect the elbows in front of your chest. Then chin goes down. Look to the left. Look to the right. Elbows go back. And repeat. Out. Up. Together. Look to the left. Look to the right. And go back. How are you feeling? It's a bit refreshing, right? So within this exercise, you have all the muscles of the shoulder, you have all the important structures of your cervical spine, of your thoracal spine. When you extend the arm, you extend your thoracal spine, and you also activate all the muscles of the shoulder joint. If I could pick one exercise for our patients to do at home, in order to prevent and improve their shoulder health, you would pick this exercise. Do you have any questions to the exercise? I think it's clear. If possible, try to remember that and do that with your next shoulder patient. We can sit down. Okay. Yes.
Can you describe this exercise to restricted range of motion?
This you do with restricted mobility patient, and also with the patient who has. Actually, you can do that with all patient groups because of the tension.
Shoulder rate is 90.
That's fine. If you do this movement 10 times, you increase the range of motion. So this is also a mobilization exercise, which improves the mobility of the shoulder. So this is something that you can do with the frozen shoulder patient, but you focus on the range of motion that they have. And they can only do one sequence, outer rotation. Or they can do just elevation and try to come further and further up with each movement. So the variations of these exercises can be used with all three patient groups, but you can exclude the areas of the exercise which can restrict or cause pain within the patient. So sometimes it's also enough to just do the outer rotation without any form of resistance in order to regain this mobility. But preferably, in order to have the full range of motion, it's also important to engage with the full exercise in order to restore the mobility of the shoulder. As I had a conversation with Sagar, one question has come up about the opportunities and how the work is structured in Germany. Does any of you has ever been to Germany? Is it a country, or is it a country you would like to visit? No? Yes? So, if we talk about physical therapy in Germany, this is a market that is in a very high demand. Germany is suffering from a demographic crisis. So basically, the median age in Germany is 45. People are getting older and they're in need of physical therapy. So as a practice owner, we have a very high demand of a patient. We don't know what to do with them, and we need people who can actually treat them. So if you're coming to Germany as a physical therapist, you will always find work. Then it also provides a very strong job stability. So people who are working in Germany will also in 10, 20, 30 years will always have a job. You have a lot of support programs. So for students who want to work in Germany, they can get support from the government in form of different classes to learn German, classes to enhance their further education, which are fully sponsored by the government, and also help with the accreditation of the diploma as a physical therapist in order to be able to not to only work in Germany, but also across Europe. And you also have full stipends when you have completed your accreditation. You can get sponsored for the further education classes and courses in which you get also a lot of support when you are in Germany. So if that is something that is interesting to you, you can have my contacts here. You can make a photo, or if you have a good memory, memorize some form of information. So today we just completed our workshop at the Asia Physical Therapy Center. The topic of the workshop was treatment of the shoulder and the holistic view on how you can actually get the outcomes and results from your patient with an array of different shoulder problems, shoulder issues. We have a much interesting reviews from the patient itself that we have also treated within the workshop and from the physical therapists who didn't know what certain techniques they will use within the practice in order to get the outcomes that they need. My personal experience was also very fun. It's my first time teaching this information, these techniques in India. I had very much fun. It was very enjoyable to working with you. I hope you could learn one thing or two to how to treat the shoulder, evaluate and also manipulate in order to get the outcomes with the patient that you actually want. Try to use the techniques if you can from today and if possible from tomorrow as well.
Thank you so much.